This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. This is the voice of the Lord, rending the heavens, coming with dove and lightning, announcing its presence to the world. Thundering over the crashing waters, this voice shatters the cedars of Lebanon and shakes the foundations of the earth. It disturbs and uproots the powers and prides of this world, makes powerful rulers tremble on their thrones. God's voice breaks into our presence. It bursts through our defenses, whether these be material, spiritual, psychological, social. And God's voice presents us with truth. To a crowd gathered around John the Baptist by the Jordan River in Judea, occupied by the Roman Empire, God says, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." And still, to us gathered today in this building on the shores of Lake Ontario, God says, "Look, coming up out of the water, right there, he is my beloved son." That God calls Jesus beloved son as Jesus begins his mission to the world makes a difference to us because we know something of Jesus's mission. We know of Jesus' teachings of love and justice, his death on the cross, his resurrection. When God says, "This is my son with whom I am pleased," it refers to something concrete. The Jesus who meets us in Scripture and continues to meet his church as the risen Christ. A closer look at this passage of the baptism of Jesus and this specific verse already tells us something about the Jesus who encounters us, about who this person is whom God presents to us so boldly and so dramatically as beloved son. The phrase, spoken from heaven, is a quotation from two Old Testament passages, at least two Old Testament passages. The line, "This is my son," quotes Psalm 2. Psalm 2 is a royal psalm. Many think that it was used in enthronement ceremonies for new kings of Israel. It tells of the installation of a king of Israel. In the psalm, the king gets his authority and power to rule on earth from his special relationship with God, and so God calls him my son. Son of God was a common title for kings in that time and place. The message here in the baptism scene is that Jesus is your king. It's a clear political claim, and a pretty wild one at that, when you consider the scale of tiny, conquered Judea against the seemingly eternal and unbeatable power and might of Rome. But things are about to get wilder yet, because the second half of the phrase at Jesus' baptism quotes from a rather different kind of scripture text, one of the suffering servant songs of Isaiah. These songs tell of a servant of God who establishes justice among all nations through suffering love, faithfulness, and servanthood. The line, "With whom I am well pleased," is what God says of this servant when we first meet him in Isaiah 42. So, immediately after being presented with our king, we get an indication of the kind of king that Jesus is. A kind of king that is so strange that it redefines the very nature of kingship. With Jesus, we get a king who is the full presence of servant love. With Jesus, we get a king who is the full presence of servant love. Jesus is not business as usual, only this time acting for a just cause at long last. Jesus is playing a different game. He isn't competing for the same territory. He isn't really competing at all. When your kingship exists as faithful servant love, you can't attempt to control the world, not for any outcome. When your loyalty rests in the God who gives life, you can't try to secure and manage your own and others' lives by the conventional means of domination, fear, violence, and hope in our own human strength. Later on in Matthew, Jesus' disciples quarrel over who will be greatest in Jesus' kingdom. In rebuke, Jesus tells them, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve." Learning to see, let alone embrace, the reality and goodness of this kind of love is, I find, difficult to the point of often seeming impossible. We forget it, become confused, distracted, uncertain, misguided. The love of Jesus stops having the same purchase in our lives. It doesn't drive us in the same way. We want other things. Our pursuit of other things and the time we spend with them, superficial things, tells us that we don't know Jesus' love as closely as we might think we do. Maybe we even doubt that such a love ever really appears or matters at all. It is precisely to such realities that God speaks, opening the heavens to declare, "Look, coming up out of the water, there he is, my beloved Son, the overwhelming fullness of servant love." And God's voice comes to us again and again, in quiet gentleness, in calm, persistent persuasion, in awesome and terrifying power and might, in lightning flash of revelation. One way or another, the voice of the Lord intrudes upon and points us to the profound truth of the love we find in Jesus. So where might we listen? Where do we hear this voice? One place where I recently heard the voice of the Lord reminding me of the power and goodness of love was when I was washing the dishes and heard on the radio about this man. Anas Albasha was a social worker in eastern Aleppo, the recently besieged and brutally captured city in Syria. He was apparently known throughout the city as the Clown of Aleppo, until he was killed in an airstrike in late November. He dressed up in makeup and costume to entertain the traumatized children of his city, seeking to give them moments of hope and joy. While he was involved in other more technical or practical aspects of social work, distributing food, offering counseling services, he loved the children so much that he wanted to do something special for them. He especially had a love for those children who had been orphaned by the war. When the rest of his family fled the city, he was determined to stay because of the orphaned children he would need to leave behind. A regular joker, he would act out skits with them, organize parties, and hand out presents during the equivalent of the Christmas celebrations. He was 24 when he was killed, 19 when the war in Syria began. Anas Albasha's story acts as a powerful example of God's voice breaking into the most horrifying aspects of human existence to proclaim the reality of love. It is striking how powerfully lived Albasha's life appears to us While at once this life and his work was so totally irrelevant, in one sense, to the forces masquerading as true power, this life and work had no military consequence, and even by a certain kind of calculative humanitarian standard, Al-Basha's work seems somehow excessive, perhaps even wasteful. It also does not fit with the self-victimization of a certain kind of martyrdom that pursues glory, fame, and authority. Al-Basha didn't even have a Facebook account to promote his own activities, and there are almost no videos of him at work, though he was so frequently on the streets that he was known throughout the city. The clown of Aleppo is not competing for territory, for gain, or the ability to control the world. He's playing a different kind of game. And I think he shows us that the game he's playing is the one that is worth playing. And this is a sort of power. A power that unmasks the lie that dominating armies are actually in control, and that points us to the goodness and power, the worthwhileness of Jesus' servant love. Certainly it asked me that pointed question. How are you living your life? How are you embracing the servant love that God's voice points to in Jesus? The violence and quest for gain in our world can look to be all that there is. The domineering ways of relating to others and ourselves captivates our vision. We long to secure ourselves through glory, fame, self-satisfaction, distraction, adventure, possession of things and power. The list goes on. Before long, I suspect, we find that such things, such pursuits, in fact, possess us. And of course, there is all the violence that the world commits against us, all the violence committed against us in the world. The endless onslaught of advertisement that captures our imagination and tries to tell us that we can buy our way into life. The psychic and mental domination and manipulation that we so often experience in relationships. Physical violence that is a daily reality for some and a more occasional or distant reality for others. Societal violence that causes us to feel alienation, separation, loneliness. Like the disciples in Matthew, we are fearful of this love's vulnerability, and we desire our own gain at the expense of others. We fear being vulnerable. We fear losing what we have, possessions, health, friends, family members, work, a world we understand, political stability, a clean environment, the ability to concretely receive others. We fear others instead and fear facing ourselves honestly. God's voice confronts this fear, shatters the way we try to secure ourselves as protection against this fear, and points again to the man coming out of the water. This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. As I was preparing this sermon, a line from a George Herbert poem kept running through my head as I considered my own ongoing resistance through fear, pursuit of self, to the love that I was seeing in these scripture passages. This poem is called Love 3. Love bade me welcome Yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack, from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful? Ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat. I invite you to take a moment or two to consider the routines or chaoses or rituals in your life that make you feel stuck, that prevent you from hearing the voice of God pointing to the beloved Son. Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful? Ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat.